1st, it was an eventful month in Michigan and the city of Lansing.
Well, at this point, I don't know where we're going to come up with $1 million out of the police budget.
I think we all want to have more money go to higher education, and we also want to be able to hold down tuition.
We've got this bill dropped that would cut 15% of any university that didn't meet their funding formula for employee contract funding.
Really, as an educator, I'm very concerned about the fact that we are now launching into a reform model that has absolutely no track record whatsoever.
I'm delighted that we're in the hunt, and I think that we're favored because of our workforce, because of the investment that GM has made here.
Certainly with Carl's retirement, I've been approached by many, many people.
Dawson, out to Harris for a three ball. He got it!
And to revisit March's biggest news stories in Michigan and the Lansing area, we welcome to Current State the Gongwer News Service's John Lindstrom. Welcome, John.
Mark.
Lindsay Van Holly covers the capital city and environs for the Lansing State Journal. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
And Tim Martin covers state government for MLive. How are you, Tim?
Good.
The centerpiece of Michigan news, certainly last week, if not for the month, was likely the announcement of Washington, D.C. Attorney Kevin Orr as the city of Detroit's emergency manager. He actually began his gig this past Monday. I'm curious what you think lay ahead for Mr. Orr and Detroiters. John Lindstrom, a lot of people are braced for a stormy process. What are you inclined to think?
It's going to be extremely difficult. It's been difficult in any situation where you've had an emergency manager. Obviously, the city's finances are in bad shape. They've been in bad shape for quite some time. The economic recession didn't help, and of course, the demographic situations that the city's going through doesn't help either. So from the financial standpoint, you're going to start off with, you're going to see Kevin Orr obviously try to find ways of controlling costs, shifting costs if need be, and also try to raise revenue if through no other means, through the fact that the city has done such a poor job of collecting taxes to start with. They're going to have to try to find a way of improving on that record. Nearly half of the property taxes that the city is owed are not collected on an annual basis. So they're going to have to find a way of trying to turn that around. Just collecting that money alone would make a big difference to the city's finances. But you're going to see a number of things going to have to happen. I would not be surprised to see one of the first things that's happened, outside of the fact that Kevin Orr has already said he's not cutting the salaries of the mayor and the council, which he would have the authority to do under the new act that took effect yesterday. But I think one of the things you keep an eye out for is what's going to happen with Belle Isle, which, as you know, the state offered to make that basically a state park, and the city council rejected that.
That will be revisited, do you think?
I think it'll be revisited because, if nothing else, that will take about $5 million off of the city's ongoing budget requirements.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing where you look for every nickel and dime you can. So
whether restructuring or a bankruptcy filing happens seems to also be a part of this discussion.
Well, that's certainly going to be a long-term thing. When he was announced, Kevin Orr said at the press conference, "Don't make me go to bankruptcy." So in effect, he's throwing out, saying, find a way to work so that we can get this to go. Of course, we did have yesterday a lawsuit filed, not only on behalf of Detroit, but all the cities that are in emergency management situations. So we'll have to see what happens with that, whether or not the law is upheld.
Tim Martin, what's your take?
Well, the numbers that they're dealing with in Detroit are just scary. I mean, I'd be nervous if I was taking Kevin Orr's job. He's got $327 million budget deficit, $14 billion in long-term debt. You have a population that's declined 25%, I think, in the last decade, and by more than half over the last few decades. So you lose a lot of your tax base there. It's just, it is going to be a tough job, and I think, as John mentioned, an important one was kind of offering that olive branch early on by not cutting Mayor Bing's salary or the city council's
salary.
Pretty
symbolic move there.
Yeah, I thought it was very important because if Detroit's ever going to get out of the mess that it's in, they are going to need some folks all pulling together in the same direction, and that's been a problem in the city for years.
And I gather there's a consensus that a bankruptcy filing is to be avoided. if at all possible, well, and that letting Mr. Orr negotiate a restructuring is much preferable to a bankruptcy?
You certainly would prefer not to go through a Chapter 9 situation. Stockton, California right now is the largest city that is going through that. And you don't want to top that and become now the largest city that you ever have to go through that. It doesn't do anything good for the state in terms of its financial situation if your largest city is in bankruptcy. So that's a factor that obviously you would want to avoid. But you also have to hold that out as an option. And some people have said, you know, you look at General Motors, Chrysler, some large corporations that did go through structured bankruptcies and were able to restructure themselves and pull out. Maybe in the long term, that's what you need to do. One of the advantages you can do with that is restructure some of your long-term debt, which is a problem that all municipalities and all public entities are going through now because of changes in GASB rules and things like that.
Doesn't it also, though, theoretically put more authority into the hands of a bankruptcy judge?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it concentrates authority into fewer hands.
In effect, you would give. One of the things you have to remember is when Governor Snyder came up with the emergency manager idea, one of the things he was trying to do was, in effect, give an emergency manager the same authority that a bankruptcy judge has. And that was the whole idea. And so Kevin Orr, to a certain degree, has the authority that a bankruptcy judge would have. Not completely, and there are limits. And under the law that took effect yesterday, there's some additional limits as well from, say, PA4, which the public voted down. But the emergency manager has significant amounts of control and authority legally,
okay,
presuming the courts don't throw it out. And if it were to go to bankruptcy judge, it would just be one fraction more authority on the part of the bankruptcy judge.
Okay. Let's go local here regarding municipal revenue for a few minutes. Lansing's closely watched financial health team released its long-awaited report this month. It was months in the making. There were pages of pretty aggressive recommendations to come to terms with Lansing's ongoing structural deficits. It's a lot of red ink stretching into the future, like a lot of cities. Lindsay Van Holly, could you revisit a few of the key recommendations in that report?
Sure. They started off really looking at three different areas. You know, short term, what can be done immediately in the budget coming up for the next year. What can be done over the longer term, things like contract negotiations, controlling pension and health care costs are really the big piece of that. And the last one is sort of a regional approach. What can we do to sort of combine services with other local governments? The fire study that's ongoing with Lansing and East Lansing and a few townships is one example of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they ranged from, you know, selling City Hall and finding a joint headquarters with the school district, taking a look at streetlight fees and hydrant fees,
right,
with BWL, which actually was the largest line item at about $5.5 million,
right,
and really shifting that out of the general fund and into the hands of the users.
What kind of response did this report get?
It's certainly bold, and that's what, you know, Mayor Bernero had said from the beginning. You know, put everything on the table and have that be, kind of your vision for what is coming next. I think it certainly got that response. There are a lot of things in there that are going to take a lot of work and a lot of review really to do.
And Mayor Bernero followed up with his budget last week. Did that document include a lot of these financial health team recommendations, or did he sidestep it for some reason?
The major one that's in there, the streetlight fees, actually did make it, and that alone can actually close out the deficit now. The city had been projecting about $9 million deficit, and has been reduced to about $5 million.
Right.
$2 million more than projected in property tax revenue collection, and about $2 million less than in healthcare costs.
But it's, I want to say it's $46
a year.
A year additional for BWL customers. Is that going to get some resistance? I mean, Carol Wood was here the morning after the budget was announced. You know, she wasn't really eager to get on board with that and pass those costs on to BWL customers. How big of an issue is that going to be?
You know, it certainly has the potential. There's a lot of, you know, I can see a lot of resistance happening in the sense that, you know, people pay property taxes. You know, the argument being that we pay for a lot of these services already. But the challenge is that, you know, as property tax, property values go down, the amount of money you take in in revenue also goes down. So right. it's sort of a balance act that's going to have to be worked out.
The financial team's recommendations included a $2 million haircut for the fire department and a $1 million cut for the police. Here is Lansing's police union executive Tom Krug responding to that last week here on Current State.
I think part of the study brought out some good points that they need to make part of the city, the cemeteries, the golf courses, and so forth, self-sufficient. But as far as the police department, they've lost 65 positions in the last few years that they haven't filled. They're at their all-time low as far as staffing. And we feel the staffing can't go any lower than it is now. And at this point, we don't see where we can come up with $1 million.
That's Tom Krug of the Fraternal Order of the Police in Lansing. Lindsay, any thoughts on who's got the leverage in this discussion? Is it the administration or is it the unions?
You know, they both certainly have a position, and it's going to be sort of interesting to watch how it plays out. You know, they have said that they're not interested in opening the contract. It expires in 2015. You know, they have that that they've been working under.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges is going to be the city has been setting aside some money in order to be able to fund some police officers who are basically grant-funded right now.
Right.
And that grant expires next year. And so the mayor's position has been that, you know, if we can control some of these legacy costs, we'll be able to, set more money aside and sort of protect the jobs.
Keep those police.
Right.
Yeah. Tim Martin and John Lindstrom, how are these disputes playing out around the state? Any thoughts on that? Is there a pattern here? How much pressure are municipal unions feeling?
Well, clearly they're feeling a lot. And you've seen this now ongoing for quite some time. And I just want to say about the plan that former Mayor Hollister came up with, you really would be hard-pressed to find anyone better at coming up with the concept of adopting and adapting than Dave Hollister. He did it in the legislature. He did it when he was mayor here in the city. He understands that people want the services that they both need and have always wanted. And the traditional ways of paying for those services are getting really, really stretched. So, you know, since everything is now a marketable commodity, doesn't matter what it is, from trash to city halls, find a way of turning that into revenue for the city. That does mean, however, that the people who are on the line doing the actual work, who obviously got to focus on the jobs that they're doing, it puts them under new pressure because they still got to do the job they've been doing. Understanding that there's going to have to be a new way of adopting and adapting to how to pay for those things. And that's a stress that everywhere across the state they're going through.
Tension between universities and school districts and the state grew last week when Republican lawmakers advanced a bill that would cut state funding by 15% to any school that negotiated a new long-term contract with teachers that did not cut at least 10% of its budget. This mostly affected Wayne State University and the University of Michigan. Now, State Rep Sam Singh first announced and seriously criticized this development here on Current State early last week. The next day, here's how Republican Representative Al Pasholka ended up defending the move. He is recounting his hearings with Wayne State administrators before his subcommittee.
In the hearing, we asked Wayne State point blank, what are the savings to taxpayers? They made some statement about possibly $10 million in health care costs, but you've got an 8-year contract with a $1,000 signing bonus and a 20% pay increase. There is $0 saved for taxpayers.
Tim Martin, where does this legislation stand right now?
Well, right now, these particular proposals have only moved one step. Basically, they've come out of a House Appropriations Subcommittee. So they've got a lot of steps for this thing to actually become a reality, if it ever does become a reality. The next step would be it goes to the House Appropriations Committee, and then it'd have to be approved on the House floor, on the Senate floor, and signed by the governor to happen. So in my mind anyway, it's kind of an open question as to how this proposal will look by the time it's all done. Will universities like Wayne State or U of M be punished at all, or will they kind of dial down that 15% to a lower number?
John Lindstrom?
Well, the governor has been cautious in talking about this. The Senate has been cautious about talking about this. The universities, of course, have a constitutional protection in terms of their overall authority. There's obviously, and you could just hear it in the tone of Representative Pishulka's voice, there's a lot of bitterness on the part of the supporters of right to work that that people tried to negotiate contracts before the law took effect. There was another radio commentator today we happened to hear talked about backroom deals. Well, if that was a backroom deal, I suppose anybody purchasing property is involved in a backroom deal. But what was very interesting was that yesterday all of the supporters of right to work were alarmed when Kroger announced that they had come up with a contract with their union, and they just could tell that they felt betrayed by that as well. We'll see what happens with this. I mean, clearly the law existed as the law existed, and people took advantage of the law. And it's a little strange to turn around now and say, well, you're going to punish them for it. But this, I think. I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen to express the Republican legislators' discontent. I don't think it's going to necessarily be 15%.
Not this intense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Lindsay, can you update us on what happened in the Lansing School District here? There was a new contract hammered out there too.
You know, they basically, you know, the K-12 districts, I believe, are sort of in line to lose, you know, some technology or performance grants. Lansing, I think it's more than about $100,000, I believe. We'll have to watch and see really what happens there.
Okay. Tim Martin, a proposal that would expand Michigan's Education Achievement Authority has a lot of Democrats and school officials angry. They say the bill that would expand state oversight from a number of failing Detroit schools to the full bottom 5% of the state schools is way premature and a power grab. How much momentum does this EAA expansion measure have here at the end of March?
It's got some momentum. A version of that bill passed the House, I think it was last week. And what they've done is they've changed this proposal quite a bit from what was going on last year. It no longer would cover the entire bottom 5% for academically failing schools. It would now cover 50 of those schools.
Right.
So that's a significantly smaller proposal than it was a year ago.
Okay.
It's still got a lot of Democrats in traditional K-12 folks nervous. But they have made changes, made it smaller, given schools some more options to try and stay out of the Education Achievement Authority. They have given it a more momentum than it had last year. And I would expect that some kind of EAA legislation is going to pass this year.
Marketing Resource Group of Lansing does a lot of work with the GOP, and I have to ask you about their latest poll, which the Lansing State Journal wrote up in an editorial here this morning. It finds that what the LSJ says are pretty narrow margins in the race for Attorney General next year. It theorized a race between incumbent Bill Schuette and Gretchen Whitmer. It's got Schuette by 5% with a margin of error of 4%, and the State Journal suggests the GOP ought to be worried about this. John Lindstrom, what do you make of that?
Well, we're still talking about basically 18 months before the election, so I think the importance of these kinds of things are more for the professionals in the game who look at it and start saying, okay, who can the candidates be and what sort of things do we need to look at? If I remember correctly, it was also a fairly high, don't know, part of that poll. It does, however, reflect the fact that Democrats are saying they're going to turn 2014 into a very, very significant year. Typically, non-presidential election years go better for the Republicans than they do for the Democrats, because this year, for 2014, the Democrats see it as their shot at getting back at things like right to work. It demonstrates that they're going to be trying to make this a bigger race, a tougher fight than whole overall, and the Republicans recognize that as well.
I'd like to go around and ask each of you what you felt was arguably an overlooked or underreported story from the month of March. Lindsay Van Holly, what do you think?
I don't know that it's so much overlooked or underreported, but one thing that happened actually just this week that'll be really interesting for the city of Lansing is General Motors unveiled the new Cadillac CTS at the New York Auto Show. If you look at it, it is much different than the current version. You know, the sort of the motto is sort of longer and lower leaner. And leaner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's going to be, it's built here at the Lansing Grand River plant, and you know, really is when it starts this fall, it really is going to be you know, sort of a 5 to 7 year really commitment from GM to the local plant here.
We do have a huge stake in the CTS.
Absolutely.
Not in Cadillac in general, but the CTS in particular.
Well, and after the success of the ATS, especially North American Car of the Year in Detroit in January, you know, there's going to be a lot of expectation on the CTS to do just as well. So.
Right, and a new model's coming to LGR, too. We're waiting for the Camaro in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Learning more about that. Tim Martin, overlooked and underreported in March.
Well, I think... this theme has been reported in bits and pieces, but maybe not in one big chunk. But Governor Snyder and the legislature, they're still kind of feeling each other out in this particular term. The governor has not had a lot of success getting some of the things, some of his top priorities done. He's still trying to come up with more than $1 billion for roads. Doesn't seem to be going anywhere. He wants to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And, of course, his proposals for a state-based and then a partnership on the health exchange has not come to fruition, and they might get stuck with a federal health exchange there. It just seems interesting to me that they don't seem to be on the same page on a lot of those things this year.
So it's going to be an interesting duration to the rest of the governor's term, it would seem. John Lindstrom, we got under a minute.
Real quickly, Attorney Richard McClellan took on the task of developing a concept of changing state education overall. This has been a big worry for the education community, in effect taking the governor's idea of basically blowing the whole thing open and coming up with a whole new concept where anyone can go to school anywhere that they want. He was supposed to deliver his proposal to the governor this month. He's held off because there's a great deal of concern about it still. He's ready to go. It's done. It's ready to go. But he also acknowledges that this is going to be a very... You know, if you were to attempt something like this, it's going to be incredibly significant. There's a lot of pieces to this that would have to be worked out.
We want to thank our Month in Review panel for the month of March, the Lansing State Journal's Lindsay Van Hulley, John Lindstrom of the Gongwer News Service, and Tim Martin for MLive. Thanks, one and all.
Thank you.
Thank you.